Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
. 2016, what a year it has been. Donald Trump is President of the United States of America. Boris Johnson is our Foreign Secretary. But at least Boris Johnson is only our Foreign Secretary. Donald Trump is the leader of the free world. Where was the American Michael Gove when we fucking needed him? Boris Johnson, of course, a dangerous bullshitter. Three documented affairs, conceiving two love children. He had to write different articles, didn't he, to work out how he felt about Brexit. Presumably he had to sleep with different women to work out how he felt about infidelity. This is the man who said he went into politics because, as journalists, he said, you never get statues built for you. What sort of masochistic narcissist dreams of themselves immortalised in bronze being shat on by pigeons? But the question we have to ask ourselves, would he be even any good as a statue? And of course, do you think he could stand there for all eternity, motionless for his country? Of course he couldn't. After about a week, he'd be discovered somewhere near the A1 molesting the Angel of the North. Of course, the economic implications of Brexit never really seemed to kick into Britain, did it? Until we were threatened that we wouldn't have Marmite on the shelves and that we might have to buy Vegemite instead. Oh, Middle Britain was furious, wasn't it? That foreign nonsense coming over here with its added celery and onion. If I want concentrated leftover brewer's yeast, I want British concentrated leftover brewer's yeast. I mean, who first got some leftover brewer's yeast and said, oh, I'm going to put a little bit of that on my toast. Oh, I'll let that ferment in my stomach. And after that, I'll get a teaspoon. I'll whack that in a mug. I'll pour boiling water on that. And that'll make a lovely hot drink that tastes of salt and slippers. And people say to people like me, they go, oh, you stand up, sure, right, aren't you? You've got loads of new material now. What do you have to worry about the economic implications? And let me tell you, I've been an actor for 25 years. I know what austerity looks like. And the fact that none of you here actually associate me with acting, that shows you how much austerity I've been through, ladies and gentlemen. So would you please welcome our three guests for tonight, Dr. Sarah Wollaston, MP, the former political editor of The Guardian, Michael White, and Miles Jupp. Thank you very much for coming, everybody. Welcome along. This is the Slacktivist Action Group. To sort of get us going, we always like to start off with a little confession. the idea that we're not all as good at things as we might be. So let's start off with you, Miles. Can you give us a little confession to the Slacktivist Action Group, something that in an ideal world you might not be quite as slack as you are?
Well, I wish I could remember all my passwords, for instance. This, what we're doing a lot of online. I know I shouldn't shop online. I'm always shop local, but I don't. But you've got to, you know, you just can't, not this late. Normally I do for 11 and a half months of the year. But, you know, someone that has your bank details and yet some sort of tiny password of yours, do you think, just go easy now. Just now, it's definitely me. It's my laptop. You've known all my addresses. You've known all my credit cards. The least, just fucking let me into your website. That's what I'm saying. But there's a lot, I don't generally agree with being slack.
I always read an incredible statistic where almost 50% of certain people, some demographic, where their password is actually the word password. Yeah. How stupid do you have to be? You go, oh, I need a password, or the only one I can remember, password. That'll do. Nobody else will have thought of that.
But that's Hillary Clinton, wasn't it?
I think laws should generally be a bit sort of vaguer and whatever, and whereas people get into trouble for something and they go, well, technically it's not against the law, but I think people should be able to sort of make their own decisions and go, I know it's not against the law, but you're being an arse, so you're going down. Whatever it might be.
We look forward to your going to the bar at some point. Yeah. And Judge Jeffries will have nothing on Judge Jupp. I was going to offer to the group, I would like to be slightly less slack on clickbait, because they give you those little pictures and they look enticing with a little caption underneath, whatever it is. Oh, click on this and you'll be able to see your celebrity be able to get their fashion for £9 in Matalan or something. And you think, oh, I'll click on that. I want to see what that looks like. And then, of course, you know, sometimes you go out, you buy the clothes, come home, you look nothing like the celebrity you were supposed to look like. You just look like somebody who spent £9 in Matalan.
Well, there's one. Guess what they look like now? You know, you'll never guess what the county championship winning Warwickshire side from 1994 look like now. And you think, I have to know. Yeah. And you press it. And, of course, they're all sort of fat men, many of whom have been in rehab.
So, Michael, what would you like to offer to the group?
Well, the first thing I've got to offer is I must change one of my passwords, which is password.
Excellent.
Well, apart from that, and apart from the fact that, with hindsight, Doctor, I should have been kinder to my kidneys. Next time, I'll look after them better. I'm beginning to get an uneasy feeling I haven't done it right. But that apart, I'd be probably more careful with personal hygiene.
It's a bit late for that one, is it, Michael? Or...
it is, I know, but I'm better than I was. When I first met my wife, I used to clean my socks by sprinkling them with aftershave. And I don't do that anymore. I'm better. How much better, I'll tell you another
Is she
time.
Still with you, Michael? Or?
Yeah, most of the time.
Yeah.
But it's...
I bet she's egging, oh, I miss it. I miss
issue.
That aftershave from the socks. That's what I used to love about him, that was. Sarah, what about you?
She's a lucky girl, Michael. Naomi, New Year's resolutions. Yeah, I'm just going to lie next time. I'm going to go for... I'm going to put on a stone. I'm not going to read any novels. What else, mate? Or I just make it all up.
Yeah. Because it's a stupid time to say you're giving up stuff, isn't it? Middle of winter, you know, you've just had the Christmas festivities, you're a bit miserable. You know, it's the time to indulge. If you're going to make some resolutions, make them on April the 1st, and then you definitely don't have to keep them, do you? Let's talk a little bit. You've obviously been a busy lady recently, Sarah. You are the chair of the Health Select Committee. Thank you very much for coming along. You were also got your seat through an open primary, one of these things where basically the whole constituency gets to vote, not just the Conservative members, and obviously a very open-minded policy. In fact, you've proved so open-minded as a constituent MP, as it were, they haven't done it very often subsequently. You know, this idea that you were, you know, you so take in the views of all constituents, the idea that you're not slavishly going after what the central office say. I mean, surely, given the fact that you speak your own mind so much, every chance of being Foreign Secretary fairly shortly.
Yeah, I'll leave my number later. Yeah.
But you're a fan of open primaries.
Yeah.
And we should have more of them.
Yeah, and I talk to politicians from the States and I say, ask how much they spend on their open primary, and they ask me and I say nothing at all. It's just impossible for that to happen in the States. That's probably why we've ended up where we are.
Well, what do you make of Boris now, every time he opens his mouth, we then hear that these are not the government views, don't we? This seems to be... He's the third most powerful person in the government. If they're not the government's views, you're thinking who actually does represent the government. We know that Theresa likes to keep her cards very close to her chest, but surely she could tell Boris what the government's view is at some point. But on that last one that he actually said about Saudi Arabia, in some ways everybody was thinking, well, of all the things that Boris has said, how come actually this one isn't the government's view?
Exactly. Quite.
Boris, I mean, we found out this week, didn't we, the water cannon, for instance, that he bought as London mayor, that he said he was willing to have it tested on. They're going to sell it now, aren't they? Sell it, massive loss, you know, the London taxpayers. But even worse than that, they're selling it untested. We've missed a trick there, haven't we, for Christmas? Get the foreign secretary back on his zip wire, coming down, and then fire him back up with the water cannon.
Do you think they'd wash my socks?
It could just work.
A water cannon may be all that's, you know, the only option left to us, I suppose. Yeah. Have they been? Didn't he try and pimp them up, though? He put stereos and stuff in them, didn't he?
He did. He pimped them up for absolutely no reason.
It wasn't to...
Why you want to listen to Ness and Dorma as you're hosing people down? I've no...
Well, it is like presumably like sort of fighter pilots listening to Another One Bites the Dust and stuff like that during the Iraq War and stuff. Presumably, if you're operating, you know, you want something that sort of gets you up and going, don't you? Or if you're someone that struggles with guilt about something, then you need some music that calms you down while you're sort of hosing down protesters and things like that. I'd have thought it would be useful.
Well, it's always water cannons are always thrown into the same thing as plastic bullets, but I always think there's a big difference between the two. Water cannon's no fun to be part of, but it does sound like you could have a bit of a laugh if you're in your bathers.
Yeah.
I've been plastic water shooting cannoned, it's no fun at all.
No, thank you very much. I thought you might...
Because they put filthy stuff in it as well. It makes your eyes stink.
Sarah, a lot of debate this week about social care, how to fund it. One of the suggestions that it's going to go ahead is they're now going to be able to up the council tax by 3% for a couple of years. In terms of... how best to fund it, they were saying that this wasn't the best way because you actually raise different amounts of money in the country depending on how much the increase. They were saying that this will raise 15 quid per head in Richmond but only 5 quid per head in either Manchester or Newham. So, you know, presumably the moral of that is if you are getting old in either Newham or Manchester, try and head to Richmond as quickly as you can.
Yeah, it's also that more people who live in Richmond can afford to fund their own care, whereas they can't in poorer parts. So it's
very much
not
so.
Why is it
fair for it to be money raised locally rather than nationally, or is it demented?
I can't remember. Sorry, I think we need to fund it nationally. It's like some people say, well, you should save up, but you wouldn't save up in case your house burnt down. You buy insurance, and that's what we should be doing. We should have national insurance to cover health and social care and fund it all together, and we need to be prepared to pay more. It's just that everybody thinks that somebody else should pay more. That's the problem we face. And we do need to pay more.
You were on Question Time a couple of weeks ago, and you were saying, well, how it's funded is not necessarily up to you, it's up to the government. Mm. But presumably you have a view on how it should be funded.
I do have a view, and there are lots of things set out. We don't need another royal commission, that'll just kick it into the long grass for years. We've already had all the options set up, and we need all political parties to get round the table, get real, that we're living longer, the scale of the increase in demand that we face is enormous, and we're just not getting to grips with it. So we need to be prepared to pay more for political parties to get together and decide what that is. And there's a whole long list of those if people want to go away and look at them. But I think as well we need some intergenerational fairness here as well. So I think that the suggestions that have been put forward by Frank Field are very good.
In terms of your party obviously reducing corporation tax, also reducing the amount of tax inspectors at HMRC when supposedly for any given wealthy individual, for every £1 that you actually invest in HMRC, you supposedly get £75 back in extra...
From comedians who...
Well, this is my point, very much so. Apparently, they've only got enough resources to actually investigate 35 wealthy individuals a year. So
that's
if you happen to be the 36th person on the list, you're feeling fairly confident.
Yeah.
The one that you refer to, Jimmy Carr, 675 people supposedly in that scheme. So depending on where you are, Carr came a bit too early down the alphabet and he was number 34 or whatever.
Yeah, P's going to be fine, isn't
P,
it?
P, absolutely fine. Yeah. Seriously, obviously, in terms of the choices that you face, in some ways, people would like you to speak up for health very much when it comes to priorities, and in some ways it doesn't appear to be quite such a priority for your party.
Well, I think it's coming home. The trouble is everyone's distracted by Brexit, but this is the really key issue we face at home, and so we need to get to grips with it.
Well, Michael, you've been working for the Health Service Journal now for many, many years.
Not many people know that.
No, well, you told me, so I know that, Michael. But you were saying for 40 years, I mean, you know, you've been around almost as long as the Health Service in terms of writing about it. Well, how do you...
Longer.
How do you make out the current crisis? How serious is it?
It's pretty serious because the government, although the Health Service has had a better deal than most other services, there's more demand. People like me are stubbornly refusing to die when we should.
You've looked after your kidneys too well, Michael. That's what it is.
Well, that's... I'll let you know. And there's more demand because more people coming in, more babies being born again. So it's scary. And, you know, we all expect more from the NHS. And the Daily Mail expects more from the NHS. Every day it's highlighting its successes. But, you know, Sarah's being modest because she's a nice person. Labour, too late in the day, tried to set up this deal for insurance on health in 2010, and some smart aleck in the Tory campaign nicknamed it the death tax. Anyone remember that? It was a deal which would have capped your contributions, and it would have spread the load a bit from Richmond to Manchester. And it didn't happen, and everybody's been scared of it since. And they're still scared of it.
There we go. So we just rename it the good tax, and we're away.
The life tax.
The life tax.
Yeah. We've cracked it.
That's it.
Well, you obviously swapped sides in the referendum, Sarah, in terms of you weren't so happy with what was on the side of the bus, the £350 million per week. Now, people saying, well, if Brexit means Brexit, then surely £350 million a week to the NHS means £350 million a week to the NHS. And the Leave camp saying now, well, we only said, let's fund the NHS. There was a possibility. That was one of the things that could happen. Almost like, well, you know, we give them £350 million a week. We could also have £5 pocket money a week. Or, you know, we could all have a rollover jackpot a week, or we could all spend £995 on a pair of leather trousers a week, whatever it might be. So basically meaningless if they're just saying that. What's going to happen to that £350 million, would you say?
Well, first of all, we've got the photos to prove they really did say it. It's good. And it's not going to happen. It was never going to happen. And I think as well that the awful thing was that they knew it wasn't going to happen. But they kind of reckoned that you just had to keep talking about a big number. And the more people talked about it not being the right number, the more people remembered the original number. And it was the biggest non-fact of the campaign, the one that most people remembered. There we are.
Well, and now Farage is saying, oh, well, if it was 200 million, it would have been absolutely fine, because that was, in fact, the amount that we pay them roughly per week. But even that's not going to happen for the NHS, is it?
Even
the reduced number is a lie.
The key thing is the economy. That's the point. What's going to happen to the economy over the next few years? That's the key thing that's going to fund our NHS.
She sounds a bit like a Ramona, doesn't she? By refusing to say the economy is going to go through the stratosphere, she is a defeatist and an enemy of the people, I think. We know where you live.
So, Miles, you're on tour at the moment.
I'm about to start again.
Yes, Songs of Freedom. Now, I read the list of things that are included in this. Quite a lot of things. The sexes. Also, you were talking about lost stuff, social media, manners, and medicine. It sounds like a very heavily structured show, if I may say so, rather than just a random collection of jokes.
I think a random collection of jokes would have been a more honest description of it. It's my sort of post-truth pitch of a show. I'm insisting that I'm going to talk about things that I then never address when I turn up, possibly. Sometimes you write those things months in advance of the show, and then obviously you have to sort of think, oh, I said I was going to talk about medicine, but I haven't thought of anything funny about medicine for 6 months, so I'll, you know, sort of shelve that or whatever. Like hipsters, I wrote a lot of stuff about hipsters which you might sort of do at a tryout night in London, and people go, yeah, aren't they annoying? You know, cool people get in the way and stuff like that. And then you go to, you know, get on a train for 40 minutes and people go, we're not interested in this. They don't affect our lives in any way. The hipster is yet to touch Swindon or whatever it is. And so after a while, you sort of, you know, part of that. So I wrote an incredibly lengthy piece about relieving myself in, I mean, graphic detail. And I'd...
do that in Swindon either? Or?
No one has been on public record as using a lavatory there since 1964. No, there's no... Again, it was just, turns out not... Although it's something that I find very funny.
Even still,
people... I'm sort of laughing at the fact that I wrote this thing and I learned it and I performed it about five or six times to try out things. And, I mean, people just absolutely... Like, this is not what we come and see you for. You want to sort of, I suppose... I sometimes meet people's expectations and sometimes exceed them and sometimes sort of assault their expectations.
What can we expect on the subject of medicine, though? This is what I was curious.
Well, I suppose in medicine, my feeling is that is medicine something where you want to... People talk about, oh, we don't want experts or whatever, but that is what you want. You want to be able to go to people who reassure you, essentially, and that is, I think, the main job of being...
You certainly, you don't really want to get your pants down and reveal the rash or whatever it is to somebody who's not an expert, necessarily. Yeah.
I want them to be an expert in something. It doesn't have to be a medicine. that's all right, isn't it? That's culturally fair. But I think doctors have this great thing where they can just, if they're confident, that's sort of, I know there's a lot of training involved, but that is an enormous part of the job. And I remember being in a church service once and seeing someone keel over. I was up in the gallery and someone keeled over, and the guy next to me was a doctor, and he went down and they went, well, there's all this palaver going off. And I saw him going to sleep, speaking very calmly, and this person sort of sat up and they calmed down. And he came back up and I said, what was the matter with him? He goes, I have absolutely no idea. And I said, what did you say? And he said, oh, I just said, I think he's fine. And he said that, and the blame... You know, it's sort of, it has an effect on people. Well, if the doctor thinks I'm fine, I'm fine. You know, is that, that is presumably not... That's something that you learn over time, and that's sort of part of general medicine rather than a kind of...
It's the general patter.
I'm not suggesting...
It's the opposite of the white coat effect.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, no one takes their clothes off in my surgeries anymore, though. It's the,
Why is that? Who got involved? What happened?
Speak to me.
They took them off before you were an MP, but now they no longer trust you.
Yeah. You change your initials from GP to MP, and that's what happens. Okay. Yeah.
So
very sad.
Given that we're in the festive period, you were very strong, still are very strong, about minimum pricing for alcohol, just to put a slight dampener on the festive spirit. But it's been introduced in Scotland.
Yeah.
It was going to be introduced by Cameron here, but then the lobbyists got hold of him. Mm-hmm. But even when they looked at it, Andrew Lansley, when they were going to bring it in, it was going to be at such a low level, they checked out and supposedly only one in 4,000 supermarket offers were actually going to be affected by this minimum alcohol pricing.
The new one that they've introduced. Yeah, but the actual
genuine... But it was 24 cans of Strongbow for a tenner. That was the only one that was... And you were thinking, this is not so much actually preventing deaths from alcohol, this is more publicising the supermarket and where you can get a deal. This was...
That's what we've got now, the below-cost sales, and it's not made any difference. They need proper minimum pricing.
Well, it's coming in Scotland.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
And is it an idea that time will come back in England?
Yes, I'm sure it will.
Because at the moment...
Why are these things tried out in Scotland? Or like, why is the poll tax, why was that tried out? Why are they used
smoking
as this sort of
ban.
Testing?
And
the poll tax, I think, was administered from Westminster up there. Now they're coming up with these ideas on their own. That's what Scottish Parliament does, Miles. I understand.
Well, Malcolm Rifkin introduced the poll tax in Scotland, didn't he? He's Scottish. I don't know if they said, is anyone? And he went, well, I tell you who won't mind, my lot. what on earth was going on there? Scotland.
The poll tax finished off the Tories in Scotland. Iraq finished off Labour. This could be a cunning plan to finish off Nicola Sturgeon with the minimum pricing.
Well, at the moment, you think you've got Drink Aware, haven't you? And Drink Aware doesn't seem to have particularly effective campaigns. The idea that we have a lot of people in Britain who don't drink Aware. People who have four pints of Stella or whatever start dribbling and punching themselves in the face, going, this has come as a complete surprise to me.
I'd always wondered what it was about my lifestyle that made me so aggressive and shirtless.
Michael, you've congratulations, by the way. You've recently done 45 years at The Guardian. I understand they gave you a little a leaving do, is that right? Did they?
Yeah, new kidneys.
Yeah, new kidneys. New kidneys, new socks, new aftershave.
Yeah, that's the one, the whole kit.
You've been a journalist since 1966, since a dog ran away with a World Cup or whatever it might have been, your first ever story. What do you make of 2016? Is it as momentous as we think it is?
There are years, we all know a few of them, 1789, French Revolution, which stick in everybody knows something important happened. 1815, end of the Napoleonic Wars, century of blah, blah. Then 1914, the bad stuff starts again, and I just had the horrible realisation that, give or take 12 months, we might be in a year where things have changed quite dramatically in all sorts of ways. Everybody knows what I'm talking about. It's been a big year, and things which weren't meant to happen, happened. Brexit, Trump, that Italian fellow got his spaghetti all over his shirt the other week, and there's a lot more coming down the pike. And we used to laugh at Mr. Berlusconi, only the Italians could do that. But in fact, he wasn't an outlier. He turns out to have been ahead of the game.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about Brexit, immigration being a very big issue for 2016. But not so many immigrants have taken jobs as robots have taken jobs.
Yep.
When people go into a supermarket and they use a self-checkout, they are effectively saying to the checkout assistant, I think I can do your job better than you can.
Yep.
And, you know, obviously the checkout system doesn't mind because they think it's one less job for them, but really, they should be going scab, 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 shouldn't they?
When Nigel Farage comes back as UKIP leader again, he's going to demand that all those supermarket robots are sent home. We've had enough.
Yeah. Back to the factories. But
do you think they don't mind, though, people? If you're a sort of checkout person and you're given the job, your job is to show people how to make these machines work. And if you do your job really well, well, we're all going to be signing a card for you in 4 months because you'll be leaving. I mean, presumably, this is a bittersweet thing. Being said, we've sacked all your friends, but you stay just to make sure everyone can definitely use the things that we're replacing you
with. So they should be instructing you badly so as you can't use them, so you then have to go to the checkout
system. Yeah, they should be sort of
muttering about. But it's what they are doing. I was in a supermarket yesterday. I had to call her back 3 times. Every time I touched the machine, it said, finish and pay.
Well, I think that's to be applauded. All this deliberately obstructive behaviour.
We're all doing our bit for Mr. Farage.
Cutting holes in the bottoms of the bags.
Something, unidentified object in the check...
In the bagging area.
Yeah, that's right. It's me, you fool. The good news is from the tech revolution, you know, they came after my industry first, which is why newspapers don't make money, even the Daily Mail. But they're coming after Sarah's quite soon, talking on Skype. lucky if you get a doctor, get the same robot from the supermarket.
I thought you were talking about politicians for a moment there, but...
A nation mourns.
Unidentified tumour in the baggage area.
Thanks.
And what do you make of our hope of getting a good settlement for Brexit? I mean, if Boris is in charge of those negotiations, what did he say to the Italian minister? You'll give us a good deal, otherwise you won't sell enough Prosecco. And you're thinking, well, in 2 years' time, if Boris is doing it, Prosecco will be as expensive as champagne, and champagne will cost the same amount as aftershave or whatever. You know, you won't be able to drink it, just dab it on your ear and have a sniff.
Well, if Boris is there in 2 years' time, which is one of the big questions, I don't see how he's going to make it. No, the Saudis won't put up with it all the time. He may go to Turkey again. He's been once, which astonishes me. After the limerick, everybody knows about Boris's limerick. I'm sure Miles knows it by heart.
No,
he made up a rude limerick to win a £100 prize about the, as it happens, the president of Turkey. 5 minutes later, he's the foreign secretary, who is, you know, he's asking Erdogan to hold back 75 million Turks personally from all coming in and becoming super.
How you can win a poetry competition by rhyming Ankara with wankerer is quite remarkable, isn't it?
I don't know about this at all, this limerick competition.
No, well, it's marvellous to know that you're the host of the news quiz. And
when did it happen,
you were off air. I'm guessing it was when you were off air.
If we're off air, I absolutely don't engage.
No. Yeah.
You've got... I mean, you just get burnout otherwise.
That's it. No,
nearly 24 days a year.
Is it permitted to look it up while you're all talking? I'll see if I can find Boris.
No, feel free to zone out and do a bit of Googling whilst we're...
Yeah.
We're doing the show. It won't encourage the audience to do the same at all.
Can you see what time Argos closes on Oxford Street as well?
Okay. Underpants. But the answer to your original question on how good a deal we are going to get...
Are you going to Google this as well, Michael, or are you happy to give this one off the top of your head?
Well, I'm looking up. I'd only say that chances of us getting a good deal are slightly worse than Leicester City of doing it again with the Premiership. I'd go that far. It's not going to be good.
No, well, whilst you're working out how your phone works, Miles, you yourself thought you were an immigrant. You did a Radio 4 show.
Well,
you,
I did.
You were actually convinced you were of Huguenot stock, but then having delved into it, seems less likely that your family tree includes oppressed French Protestants and more that you might well be related to hipsters down in Brighton.
Yeah, that is absolutely right, Sandy. Yeah, I thought, well, my father always told me that we were Belgian Huguenots, and so my brother and I would say things like, well, you know, of course, I mean, we were 300 or 400 years ago, our family were immigrants, of course, and that's why we would sort of... That would inform our view on that sort of thing. And then I was going to do a radio programme where I'll go back to where we were from and sort of do a comedy set about, you know, bittersweet, I suppose, about being forced to leave this beautiful country. And anyway, but this producer was booking up and he said, look, we're going to Belgium in 3 weeks and stuff. I booked the ferry tickets and I just want a venue. And basically, I want to do it as close to where your family are from as possible. And he said, well, fine, can you ring your dad? It was almost my dad that told me this, so I rang him and I said, look, we're doing this programme, just where, have you got the name of a village? And he was like, okay, well, you know, a village or a town. I ran back about half an hour later and said, I have to say, I've just spoken to my brother and two of my cousins, and no one else thinks this. and I thought, God, right, that's slightly extraordinary. Yeah, I chased it, and it turned out we got sort of one of those people that does Who Do You Think You Are, did lots of sort of research and stuff, and said not only were there never any Dutch in Belgium, it's not a Huguenot name, there were never Huguenots in Belgium. The whole thing is a complete fabrication or confusion.
That he just made up on his own. His brother didn't back him up.
He doesn't know where I spoke to my own cousin. He said, I've honestly never heard that. I don't know why you think that. So, yeah, we ended up making a programme about the fact that I'm absolutely not Belgian. I've got nothing against them.
What a way to get yourself a Radio 4 show, that is, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Dream up some backstory, then prove it wasn't true.
Yeah.
You too could be Foreign Secretary.
Michael, have you discovered what you were looking for?
I have discovered the limerick written by Boris, which won the Spectator Prize. I wondered if we should get Miles, who'll come to it fresh, to read it on our behalf.
Yeah, would you like to do that, think Miles? He would do a very fine job.
Okay, I was going to think what a beautiful voice you would have for limericks.
No, I think you'll bring something new to it.
Right. There was a young fellow from Ankara who was a terrific wankerer till he sowed his wild oats with the help of a goat, but it even stopped to thank her. That is the winning entry. How many... That is... How is that the winning entry? That is absolutely... Right, I'm just going to see what time Argos closes. How can that be the winning entry?
And then did he not go and say directly afterwards, Turkey were going to join the European Union, that everybody said it was going to be immediate, wasn't it? The Leave people saying they'd be joining very shortly. And then everybody said, well, this is rubbish. And then as soon as he becomes Foreign Secretary, he then actually tries to help Turkey join, doesn't he? Just to piss off everybody else.
He's got the most amazing chutzpah, that man, I think. He's just, it's sort of crazy. About 3 or 4 days after the Brexit vote, and then his leadership, when he said, actually, I'm not running either. And he had a period, I think, I don't know if he enjoyed it, but about 3 or 4 days where we could have made a very good case of him being the most hated man in Britain. Everyone was like, what have you done? You've done this thing, and then walked away. And I was walking down past the sort of Palace Theatre with the man who produced the show about me not being a Belgian, and we realised that on the traffic island that we were on was Boris, who was there with the cycling helmet on, just sort of gadding about town. And I kind of thought, everybody wants to kill you. What on earth are you doing? I sort of found it slightly admirable that he was going out. My friend went up and said something sort of palliative to him, and then he said, and I just said to him, you're keeping me busy at work. And he went, oh, God. And then headed off on his bicycle. But you think, why? In a way, there's a sort of degree of bravery or stupidity about that.
He was the most trusted. The poll said Boris was the most trusted man during the campaign, the referendum campaign, on either side. And in fairness to Boris, his story about where he came from stands up a lot better than that
sounds in rubbish.
Yeah. His great-grandfather was a Turkish politician who came over here, got one of our women pregnant, the usual story, married her, be fair, then went back to Turkey where his political opponents, you'll like this bit, Morris, chopped him to death. His widow sensibly took the uncontroversial English name of Johnson. And that's where Boris is. That's where the blonde hair comes from. There's a part of Turkey where there's a lot of it. It's not a bottle job in Boris's case, you know.
Lovely.
Not like you.
No need to Google that one. So let's move on to Trump. They're suggesting at the moment that the way to combat Trump in 4 years' time is to put Michelle Obama against Trump in 4 years' time. Now, surely if we've learned anything, Michael, from 2016, it's whoever should go up against Donald Trump is somebody who's not the intelligent wife of a two-term Democrat president.
I think you're onto something there. No, she won't do it. She's a very sane person by the look of it. No, she doesn't want any of that stuff.
But what do you make of Trump? I mean, he seems a very horrible character. This is the man who said about his own daughter, you described her as a piece of ass, said that he would if she wasn't his daughter. This is the president of the United States of America. I mean, daughter and his wife actually look quite similar. Very similar haircuts. If you were his daughter, you'd change your haircut, wouldn't you?
Well, it's a tricky family, that one. Very strange indeed. And this is part of this thing I was saying a minute ago. 2016, a year of change. Dear God, Trump was president. 6 months ago, most people were laughing at it, weren't they? He'd say something unusually horrible about somebody. Then it gets worse. We get all the sex stuff during the election campaign, and people don't seem to mind, or enough people. 48% of those who voted in America didn't mind. 52 did, but they didn't have the right votes in the right places. It's extraordinary, and I don't know what's going to happen. It's really scary, except there is one sophisticated explanation for Trump, which is now doing the rounds. People always explain anything if you give them 10 minutes, that the American people who voted for him took him seriously, but not literally. I can imagine them sitting there in cabins in Tennessee saying, Paul, don't take him literally, just take him when he says he's going to bomb the Chinese, Paul, and suck up to Mr. Putin. Whereas the media took him literally, but not seriously.
Yeah.
Now, that's a fairly scary prospect, whichever way you look at it.
This is the way people talk.
But it is scary.
This is the way sort of clergymen talk about the Bible, isn't it, when confronted? Don't take it literally. It's just, it's just look at the message behind it. That's what we need to do. You must understand this. And is there, Trump, then, what is then, if you're not taking Trump literally, what's the thing behind him then that people are kind of grabbing onto that he doesn't really mean?
Well, he means that he's angry. I don't know why he's angry. He's a poor little rich boy from New York. Daddy set him up in the property business with $10 or $12 million just to get him started. He's a psychopath and a liar, so far as I can see, and a narcissist.
But this was the interesting thing, wasn't it? Emily Thornberry was there saying, well...
Not as bad as that.
But she was saying... she was saying, wasn't she? She was saying that Donald Trump and Jeremy Corbyn in many ways are similar. They're tapping into the same thing. And then you look at Jeremy Corbyn...
She didn't say that, did she?
She did. Yeah, yeah. And there's basically... Wow. You look at Jeremy Corbyn and he's got a vest... he's got an allotment, and his favourite hobby is photographing drains and manhole covers, isn't it? Well, I didn't realise that actually photographing drain and manhole covers is actually a recognised hobby. You can get websites, apparently. You'll be able to Google that, Michael. They're called, they're called gridders.
Perhaps he's planning some sort of Shawshank-style escape from the whole nasty thing.
Well, the thing is, we know he likes a march, now we know why, doesn't he? As he walks along, there's a chance for him to do a bit of spotting. That's what it is.
I think the basic difference is that Trump is a populist and Jeremy is an unpopulist. Photographing drains is, an obscure hobby, whereas Trump's interest in naked showgirls is more accessible, I think is the word.
Naked showgirls and his own daughter, if he didn't know it was his own daughter.
His mistakes are easily made.
A Christmas dark. Thought. So, Miles, you are now the host of News Quiz. You said that when you get to talk about subjects now, you're hoping as the host that you'll be able to talk about bombing of hospitals in Afghanistan.
If it happens, I don't want to...
Obviously, not not to make it up just because you've got a good joke about it or whatever. But when you've got a quick turnaround for comedy shows, producers who have to do double tick compliance, executive producers, lawyers, it's much easier for them if you do a little one liner on a sneezing cat or ten
scenes. Yeah, exactly. Wouldn't it be safer if we just went with that sort of survey about the way drainage companies work in Hertfordshire or whatever it is? And that's the sort of battle that you have to fight against, I suppose. There's a sort of BBC is a corporation that's sort of under attack, I suppose, in the newsroom. There's basically been a sort of loaded gun on the table put there by the Conservative government about sort of 5 years ago, saying it's really good, this, isn't it? But obviously, it'd be dreadful if it all had to be dismantled. But carry on, do carry on doing what you're doing. And then you get this kind of pressure to be neutral, I suppose, which I don't think people benefit from being neutral. I think if people are making jokes about politics, it's really useful to know what perspective they're making them from, and then you yourself, even if you come from a different perspective, can sort of understand that joke. I mean, if you think that everything's coming out of some sort of beige centre, and then someone makes an anti-Corbyn joke, you think, oh, they must not like Corbyn or hate Labour or whatever it is. Rather than, if you know what people's politics are, then there's a sort of more nuance to it. But I think you have to push those. I'll give an example of a thing that we didn't necessarily. The Savile inquiry, for instance, Savile report was published the day that we were recording an episode, and when I arrived on Thursday morning, they were like, "Yeah, we're not going to cover that." And I said, "If we don't cover that, then we're not." Yeah. Tony Hall, he made his speech, about the Savile inquiry. He did it on the same stage that we were recording on, sort of 6 hours later. And you think, we can't not talk about that. We can't do another thing about 5p plastic bags. This is part of the thing. And what's good is that you can say, look, we've got to talk about this. Let's talk about it first. And somebody like Jeremy Hardy is able to come on and sort of answer a question about that and find the humour in it whilst also addressing what it is. Or in the same way, Andy Hamilton fielded a question about Hillsborough completely expertly. And I think if you're not talking about these things, what are you doing? I mean, also talk about the funny sort of jokes in the margin about all sorts of other things as well. But you've got
bring
to
bring the audience back with a bit of cats and dogs material. But yeah.
That's my sort of standard fallback. Yeah.
Is it true that deep in the safe at the BBC there is a joke about Princess Diana, which was so funny it was never transmitted, and then after the car crash it had to be locked away?
I can remember there was a joke about her that someone made on the news quiz that didn't make the repeat the week that she died, certainly. Yeah. But it's not locked in a safe, it's probably on Listen Again somewhere. You could find it if you happen to have any time on your hands, Michael, when you're not
And you're obviously a big fan of cricket. Now Theresa May is a big fan of cricket, apparently her favourite cricketer.
Yeah, well, that's like sort of branding sort of well, Hitler was a vegetarian, it's that kind of stuff.
Her favourite cricketer is Geoffrey Boycott, apparently, which is interesting, isn't it? An interesting choice for an avowed feminist, shall we say.
That sounds like... Yes, absolutely. That sounds like the sort of thing someone's told her to say in a taxi. I don't mind saying I like cricket, but what if someone says, who's your favourite one? Let me get on the Google. Yes, there's one called Geoffrey Boycott, say it's him. That seems most unlikely that would be someone's favourite cricketer. Someone that had sort of dreams and visions and beliefs and ideology.
several times in an interview, but you're thinking, what would Geoffrey make of leather trousers that cost £995? It would have been a bit fancy Dan for Geoffrey.
He would like to see the shine off them. Yeah, I dare say.
Yeah, he'd like to see the one with a penny with holding a stick of rhubarb and.
Yes, exactly. I imagine he's slightly more thrifty than Theresa May is. Yeah.
But what did you personally make it? £995 leather trousers. They'd be saying, well, it's sexist. David Cameron had suits that were £3,500. Yeah. But to me, both are verging on the immoral. I was trying to work out, most expensive trousers I've ever bought, I reckon, were £200. Most expensive suit, £600.
Yeah, but just think about how good your arse looked in the Mandy.
It's very sweet.
Those of us in the comedy community talked about little else for about 6 months.
But I was thinking that we're in show business. We're allowed to be irresponsible dandy peacocks, aren't we?
So are they.
Well,
yes,
are
that's
they?
True.
They are show business for ugly people. It's an old joke, but it's still a good one.
But I think, in the way, it does seem completely... It does seem like an odd thing to spend that sort of money on, but I don't know how much wear you get out of a pair of But £995 leather trousers.
What did you make of this, given that this just about managing idea, with the parliamentary expensive, it doesn't play very well to the public, does it? If people think that politicians' idea of just about managing is having to put sandbags in front of the door because the moat's flooded or whatever it might be.
Yeah. No, I think you're missing the point. The point is gold leather trousers. Girls, who wears gold leather trousers? It's a crime against fashion. That's the thing.
Be careful, Sarah. They know where you live too.
I think it's just hard to understand. In a way which people are so media managed now, it just seems to be unlikely that you'd make that mistake. How good are the people around her? I mean, doesn't someone sign off what she wears?
Oh, no, come on. She's the Prime Minister. If she wants to wear nice clothes, that's great.
I suppose...
No one would have made a fuss about
perhaps
any
Perhaps
they're
a birthday gift from Mr. May. It's a nice thought,
it's
a wholesome thought.
Yeah, leave her alone. I thought Boris was great. Lederhosen. That's
it
what
it does
they
seem
are.
A lot for a pair of trousers, but if you've ever had like sash windows made or something like that, it suddenly pales into insignificance. they are absolutely crippling.
Man of the people, Miles Jupp, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
So, Michael, you've been on the news quiz. Sarah, you were on Question Time recently. Either of you fancy going the Ed Balls route at some point, a bit of Strictly? I mean, he's now the nation's darling. You know, everybody loves him. This idea... I mean, they only seem to love him, don't they? Because he basically tried hard and was a bit shit. Which is exactly the same qualities he exhibited as a politician. If only he'd done the sort of response to the budget Gangnam style, what a politician that man could have been.
Absolutely.
I think he's taken a leaf out of Trump's book. Trump became famous as a reality TV star. Everybody knows who he is. And now everybody knows who Ed Balls is. It's extraordinary change from this hooligan bully that we all knew and didn't always love to this chap. He could probably stand in a traffic island and people would wave at him, Miles.
Well, I think so. It's a quick turnaround, and you don't necessarily trust a quick... I don't understand why it could be like a redemptive experience being on Strictly, and yet it sort of seems to be... We were talking in the dressing room, someone like Michael Portillo has undergone a sort of... he's slightly viewed differently by the public than he... I mean, if you know...
I hope you're not being risque here.
No, not at all. But if you think about the way people were treating him in May 1997, and now you sort of think, yeah, what does he think about the railways? I don't mind listening to that. Turns out, I met Michael Portillo, and he said he didn't believe that any transport should have to run at a profit. It should all be subsidised. And I thought, people didn't know that about you.
Miles, time is pressing on, but you have a book deal. You're in and out of the kitchen, your TV series and radio series. You give recipes... I read one interview for these where you say that the recipes you've never actually made, but you assume that they would be edible, apart from the one that you gave for a hangover cure. Now, obviously, with it being the Christmas period, I checked out. It was called the Heart Starter, your recipe for a hangover cure.
It was episode one of the radio series, three shots
of vodka, 300 millilitres of tomato juice, and two Resolve tablets mixed, drunk quickly, repeat as necessary.
Right.
Now, you know what comedy obsessives are like. There are going to be some people who've tried that. You've let them down, surely.
They will have pretty fizzy kidneys, won't they? I think that sounds like something I wrote when I was still finding his voice. That's somewhat unrepresentative of him. Yeah, I look at sort of recipes that are in sort of common sort of ownership, I suppose. You know, so you look at sort of six or seven different recipes for sort of spaghetti bolognese or whatever it is, and then I rewrite them, changing all the sort of amounts and change some of the ingredients or whatever, and it's really about how he... hopefully the funny in there is really about how he describes things. He's not he's a very pedantic man and whatever, so sometimes it's the sort of jokes in the margin, you might call them, where he'll say things like a handful of honey and things like that that are clearly unhelpful and impractical, but the sort of thing that he has time for. But I get very nice letters from people saying, oh yes, I've cooked the chicken curry recipe, and my father's not been well and it's the only thing that he's eaten this month. And I think, oh gosh, that's a real responsibility, actually. And that's a very nice sort of thing to get from someone. But you think, they are within the ballpark of safety. I don't look at something that's like a recipe that works and think, right, well, I'm going to change that. I'm going to sort of add two bottles of wine where it says a glass, and I'm going to swap mints for vodka or whatever it is. I think they are genuinely safe to eat. I can't endorse them any further than that.
Talking of things that are safe to eat, they were discussing, weren't they, for the psychoactive drugs legislation that came through in 2016, they were discussing nutmeg. They were thinking, was this going to be banned by it? Because apparently nutmeg is psychoactive. Now, in the time when it's all time for eggnog, this is worth knowing, isn't it? And I did some research. Apparently a Czech physiologist, I didn't say that very well, but you got the gist of what I was trying to say, he ingested three nutmegs and a glass of wine, and apparently he said he recorded having headaches, nausea, hallucinations and a sense of euphoria for 3 days. So quite why you'd be euphoric getting headaches and nausea, I have no idea.
How do you ingest nutmeg? You just grate it and then sort of snort it?
We need to ingest aware. Is that what we need to do?
Well, I think if he lives in the Czech Republic as well, there's so much fun on offer there. I mean, he could just presume that can't be the only thing he did that day. He'd probably also sort of been in a beer hall and drunk sort of 9 pints of refreshing lager and started a fight with a tram or something like that. Like that.
Maybe you could imagine that you were possibly, your family tree comes from Czechoslovakia.
Oh, yeah.
There's an idea for a Radio 4 show there.
Yeah, the old, yes, on the old...
Should say Czechoslovakia, that dates my geography a little bit, I think, but
it's interesting
Czech
you
Republic.
Should say that. No, I come from a long line on my mother's side of nutmeg merchants. so, yes, I think this one would make more of a sort of television travelogue. So, yes, why not?
So, Sarah, you come down from my neck of the woods. You represent Totnes. Totnes down in South Devon. Totnes leading the world, transition town, the first ever transition town. Now, I don't know if you've heard of transition towns, but this idea of local sustainability, isn't it? Community, quite, the idea of food inches rather than food miles. Now, if you know Totnes, it's amazing that they're leading the world, that they're so well organised, because it's basically a bunch of hippies, isn't it, Sarah?
We got our own currency as well.
That's it, the Totnes
pound.
They could
put you on the pound.
Leading. Well, we try and get everybody to do something in between shows for the Selectivist Action Group. So if you want to find out more about trying to get your town to be part of the Transition Network, transitionnetwork.org, you can check that out. But also Share Energy Co-op, where they're saying if people are short, you can join this co-ownership of Small Wind Co-op. And you can actually, apparently, sustainability and all the rest of it, for £100 for your shares, you can actually insist on having your turbines run the electricity for your house, which is quite brilliant, isn't it? You know, when Storm Barbara kicks in next week or whatever, everybody else having a miserable time, your quid's in. So, have people got some questions for the panel? We may have a time for two. You go for it, sir.
So, in the States, you've seen marijuana kind of be legalised in a number of states. Do you think that's going to come to the UK? Do you think it should be legalised? You know, we're some way off, but a lot of people are predicting it's going to happen in the next 10 years.
Colorado, it seems to be working. What do you make of that, Sarah?
I think we should look at the evidence about what happens in the States, and I think there's certainly a case for actually going to a route where we treat it as a medical issue rather than a criminal issue. So I think there's... But let's look at the evidence from the States as it emerges and see what model we should go for.
Use them as guinea pigs and then we'll see what's the best idea.
It'll probably be legalised in Scotland first.
Did you want to ask a question, sir?
So Boris Johnson, there was that leaked conversation with Darius Guppy, his mate at school, where he discussed how much he would hurt a journalist. I don't have any question, I just wanted to keep that in the public consciousness. Thank you very much. Unless people have opinions on...
Brilliant.
On
well, I mean,
like
we could
that,
pass the
power.
Microphone around the audience where everybody just tells a fact about Boris that they'd like everybody else not to forget. That's the thing for Christmas. Pass on to your loved one. If you're making your own Christmas crackers, just write some quote or something from Boris and we can all read it out over the Christmas meal and go, my God, this man is our foreign secretary. Let me tell you what we have got coming up for the Slats of Action Group. The January show is it's usually the last Monday of the month. Russell Kane is coming along. We've got Pete Wishart, MP. He used to be in Big Country with their top selling single, In a Big Country. There we go. And we'll also have Bryony Gordon from The Telegraph. February, we've got Owen Jones from The Guardian. We've also got Dan Jarvis, MP, and we've got Joe Caulfield. And in March, the 27th of March, Jess Phillips, MP, Rich Hall, and we've got Hugo Rifkind from The Times. So should be some great lineups. Please come back. If you listen to this on the podcast, feel free to get in contact, andyparsons.co.uk. Subscribe, please, if you're doing it. We'll just give you a moment now to have a little subscribe. There we go, they've done that now. That's all perfectly well worked. But please spread the word. Our catchphrase here at the Slacktivist Action Group, if a little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing, we are lethal. So hopefully we have been lethal tonight. Thanks very much to the panel. If Miles is on too, as we had Songs of Freedom, there may be some stuff that's lying about his Belgian background. You now know the truth, but go and see him. Other tours are available, ladies and gentlemen. Check the website out for details. But hope you all have a brilliant Christmas. Go easy on the eggnog. But yeah, hope it's absolutely fantastic. You haven't got an excuse this year. If it gets to Christmas Eve and you haven't actually bought a present for a small child, this is the year to do it, obviously, because you can just go to them, well, I'm terribly sorry, but due to Brexit, Santa's not been allowed into the country. So, too cruel. I wasn't sure if it was the best way to end the podcast. I've done it now anyway. So thank you very much for coming today. Please give a big round of applause for our three guests. Dr. Sarah Wallace, MP, Michael White, Miles Jupp. Thank you and good night.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.